Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
The barge is equipped. The lifeboats are ready. It's only listing slightly to the right. Euros, we're coming for you. Welcome to the Football Ramble. It's Wednesday, 2nd of June. I'm Kate Mason.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Luke Moore.
Although it occurs to me, would it list to the right or to the left? If it's overstocked on the right, would it list to the left?
List to the right. I think you're absolutely spot on. Right. And I think you've ruined your own well-written good line at the start.
Oh, no. What a disaster. I'm thinking of sailing boats and, you know, you like lean out to the side to make it go the other direction.
Not on the barge.
Don't lean out of the barge. You need to stay in the barge.
The only time you want to lean backwards out of a barge is if you're trying to reach out to the towpath to grab a beer. Someone's left on the side for you.
I thought you had like a separate beer dinghy going alongside.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
That's what we're using one of the lifeboats for, actually, I think, is we stock that up with a bit of ice.
And Kate also goes into every major tournament with a cap with two cans of beer, with straws coming down into her mouth for all time.
And I also only drink cans of beer from those, what are they called? Stubbies, Aussies call them, with the stupid little sleeves that they use for reason.
It's to keep them cold.
To keep it cold. Yeah, the stubby is like 330 millilitres. How hot is it going to get in the course of
your trip? That's a shot for
Mason. That's what I open with. Those are the shots I open with. Oh, guys, the squad is complete. Who have we got? Mason Greenwood pulled out early yesterday with an injury. Aaron Ramsdale, Ben White, Ben Godfrey, James Ward-Prowse, Ollie Watkins and Jesse Lingard all left out, although we're going to see him play tonight. The plot thickens. We'll get on to the others in a minute, but I know given his prowess at set pieces and how many dead ball situations we benefited from at the last World Cup, you'll be seething at the absence, Luke, of Southampton's James Ward-Prowse.
No, I'm not seething, actually.
But no one else can take a free kick.
Yeah, I know, exactly, yeah. Although, this is the thing about it, right? And I know what you're doing here, Mason, and I will indulge you for a moment. People are saying, James Ward-Prowse this, James Ward-Prowse that, dead balls this, dead balls that, right? And they're also saying the midfield is a little bit light for particular reasons around injuries.
And fine. Henderson is injured.
Yeah, I accept that, right? But Gareth Southgate was literally asked a question in a press conference yesterday about how he's going to choose which free kick takers are going to take free kicks because there's so many of them, right?
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a justification to put a player into an England squad just because he's good at free kicks when it's a tiny percentage of what you have to do. And all the people who I've seen talk about James Ward-Prowse haven't actually given any concrete reasons, to my knowledge, about why he should actually be in there and why he should actually be a part of what is a really exciting, talented, great young England squad. It's no disrespect to James Ward-Prowse. Obviously, I like to take the piss about out of him a little bit because he plays for Southampton. But generally, it's not a dig at him. It's like, you know, the international football is littered down the years and the decades with players who were really good players who didn't have big international careers because there were other players out there better than them. It's no disgrace. It's just one of those things.
Yeah.
So I don't want to focus on the negatives. I don't want to focus on who's not in the squad because we're gearing up for a big tournament. It's going to be exciting and we've got a lot of good players in there.
Yeah.
But do you feel a little bit let down by the fact that there's not really any controversy in this squad?
No.
Manufactured, yes. Yeah. Real, not really.
Well, people have tried the right-back thing, haven't they? Yeah. That's the big story.
The bloody right-back, Trent Alexander-Arnold. It's like Southgate said, he was always in. I spoke to him 3 weeks ago. Mm.
But also, I guess the thing now will be whether he plays or not, I suppose, and whether he starts or not. And if he doesn't, there'll be a constant call for him. And if he does, there'll be a constant call for someone else in that right-back berth, because I think that's going to be the narrative just underlying the tournament, isn't it? But I was dreading someone like Trent Alexander-Arnold, or possibly even Jack Grealish, being left out. So you had this, oh, if only he'd done that ahead of the tournament. He hasn't got that. And that's really, really good.
Exactly.
And it's like...
And Greenwood obviously being injured is helpful as well.
Greenwood pulling. It was weird the way the cuts started happening. Was it first with Greenwood pulling out and then you're hearing that James Ward-Prowse hadn't made it? It's like, why is he picking them off like in a horror movie? Like, why are they gradually getting cut, like not all at once?
It's just like Mike Myers from the Halloween film. You just turn up their hotel room with a chainsaw.
Yeah, sorry, Mason.
Like the guy from Friday the 13th with a big hockey stick.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. Do you know what? I watched a press conference yesterday, as I'm sure many people listening did, and I'm sure you guys did. I like the fact that the team and the squad is made up of a load of players that are exciting, that are interesting. I know Michael Cox did a piece fairly recently about the type of young players that England are generating now, which is far different to what it used to be. Mm. And that's a reason to be excited, not just because of the novelty of it, but because it's, you know, those players are effective. Those players are great to watch.
Yeah.
Those players can affect games. And secondly, I think our manager, not saying he makes all the right decisions, not saying I agree with every decision, and I'm not saying that, you know, he'll necessarily be successful or that this is a key to success, but he's a class act, Southgate.
Yes.
He's very in control of his environment. He knows what he wants to do. And Marcus has talked a bit about this before, about how perhaps it's because he wasn't necessarily seeing himself take the job, at least at the time he took it. He seems to have a good appreciation for what it entails. And he said that quite a lot, didn't he? I understand when people say things about me, this is the job I'm in. But the reason I spoke to Trent 3 weeks ago is because I want him to be on the same level, essentially. And there was a really nice moment in the press conference, because the game tonight is being played at the Riverside Stadium in Middlesbrough, which is an old stomping ground of Gareth's. Mm. He said he was interviewed by a local journalist. And there was a moment of genuine affection. I can't remember her full name, but I think she works for BBC Look North. She's called Dawn someone. And among all the bullshit, among all the world's media being focused on it, she was like, Gareth, it's Dawn so-and-so. And straight away, even though he's not worked in Middlesbrough for years and years, he was like, Dawn, it's really nice to see you. How are you? How are you getting on? And, she was like, oh, it's great. Nice to see you too. How are you? Yeah, fine. Thanks. And it was like old friends meeting again. And I think that speaks a lot to the type of person he is. And that makes me proud of him being the England manager. I'm not saying it means he's going to win it, but I mean, it's great to have a team like that and a manager like that who's not a little bit prickly, who's not a little bit kind of up himself, who does understand the greater good, who does understand the meaning of the team and how that's the greatest and most important thing. And it made me really excited when I saw the squad. And
what I'm hearing is July the 11th. Saddle up, Wembley. That's what Luke Moore is saying.
He said
the final will be at Wembley. This much we know.
We'll be influencing the game as usual, Jim.
Yes, indeed.
He said, didn't he? Including the two friends, he said, look, we're planning for 9 games. This is why I've picked the squad. Mm. This is why we've done what we've done. We're planning for 9 games.
And like Gary Lewin said as well, you know, you can take Jordan Henderson. He may not have played since February 20th, but he can be ready.
Absolutely. I mean, the fitness of Henderson and Maguire are slight worries for me. They could be things that do become a problem, but obviously he has thought about that. And I suppose it is what it is. And in his shoes, I'd have made the same decision for bringing those players. I think centre-back might be the position that we're not quite strong enough in. Yeah. When you look around at the quality of the squad, it is pretty dazzling. But like the centre-backs, I do wonder if like we may just come up short against some proper top-quality attack. But one of the things that makes me so happy about this squad, looking at it, which goes on top of the maturity that you're talking about with Southgate and the pragmatic, kind of realistic and kind of, you know, thoughtful approach to a tournament like this, is I think back to when Spain's amazing generation was coming through, and we hadn't even been doing the show that long, and you would look at those players coming through with jealousy, really. And it wasn't even just the players, even the players on the fringes of the squad, the young players coming through. It's like, oh my God, did you see that Sergio Canales goal? Remember that famous goal he scored when Madrid bought him off the back of it? It's like, they've got another one coming through. And obviously it didn't always work out for all of those players. But you would look at the England squad and you think, why? How come we don't do this? Yeah. Why don't we have players that are this technical? And obviously the changes at that point were already being implemented at the youth level to make sure that, you know, if you were tall, you weren't either a centre-back or a centre-forward. And like, you know, there was an actual focus on players being able to technically understand how to use a ball when they were children. And now we have that generation coming through. You've got your players like Phil Foden and Bukayo Saka and the young players who just have a lot more technical quality than we're used to seeing from young, raw players coming through. I don't know. Would you describe any player in that squad as raw?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I don't think they are. Sure. So the average caps per player in our squad, in the England squad, is 20, which I think is the lowest number in the tournament, i.e. the lowest average. It's also the youngest average in the tournament as well. But that doesn't...
Age average.
That doesn't make you feel like we're under-equipped.
No, it doesn't.
At all.
Look at how far these players have gone in Europe, a lot of them, over the past three seasons as well. They've done incredibly well. They've got a lot of experience. I mean, maybe I'm talking myself into what will later become pain. In fact, I know we're doing that. But, I mean, this is the best squad we've had in a long time, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I think like that. No gaps, apart from the one you've identified.
I think with that, though, brings its own pressure. Like, there was almost like a free hit element to 2018.
Mm.
And, half of what you said there, Jim, was true in 2018 as well. Exciting players, young players, technical players, etc. And they came up short, but they grew a lot and they learnt a lot and they impressed, and it was a great summer and we were all very happy as England fans. Now we've got to see how far we come, because those players are more experienced, new, even better players have come through, and we've got a lot of games at home. Everything's stacked in our favour. The same way the draw was stacked in our favour in 2018, if we're honest.
Which is also really important to think about.
So yeah. I would like to build on what you said, Jim, about the centre-backs thing and say, actually, if you were going to be super critical, you would probably argue that outside of the attacking aspect of our team, we're probably weakest in goalkeeper, defending centrally, and midfield centrally.
Pope's a huge miss, I feel.
I think Pickford, a lot of people aren't convinced by him anyway, but if you are convinced by him, there's nothing after him, really. I mean, Dean Henderson's got one cap, Sam Johnson's got zero caps. No disrespect to them, but they ain't gonna fill everyone with confidence because they can't.
But Henderson has been making starts. I mean, in comparison with, say, let's say these Euros were taking place a year ago.
Sure.
You know, he has been starting regularly.
He's played a lot of football
for a
massive
club.
He's played a lot of football, but I think it's not quite night and day, but there's a big difference, even if you're at Manchester United, between playing and vying for a first team shirt at Man United and being as part of that bubble in England squad in the Euros. And if he's asked upon after 3 minutes of the first game, it's going to be a big step up.
Yeah.
And I think we need to acknowledge that. I'm not using it as a lightning rod to criticise him. I'm just saying that's the case. Centre-back is the same. I think Jim's right, particularly with the fitness of Harry Maguire. Centre midfield, possibly. If Jordan Henderson's going to break down an injury, he needs to do it before Saturday so we can actually replace him. And then, but what that says is, actually, I was going to make this a positive point. I think everyone would like to see him and just go for it then.
Yeah.
Look, you ain't going to... Andy Brassel talks a lot about international tournaments being more defensive-minded and how like people are going to somehow do what Greece did in 2004 or whatever. I don't agree with that. And I think people who know loads about football, like Andy, always look at stuff logically like that and say that. I don't particularly remember tournaments always being like that. And I don't think we saw that from the Champions League final, for example, which would be the same principle. Mm. End of a long season, people desperate to win. It was really attacking. It was end-to-end.
Yeah, but that's a specific one game. I think he's talking about the way you manage your games because it's a knockout, because it's, you know, it's tournament football, obviously. You have to
but if England approach it in that way, what I'm saying is they'll come up badly short, in my opinion. Mm. So they have to go for it, I think. I think they just got to go for it. They've got to... you know, play to their strengths, play an attacking team. Don't quite go the full, never go the full Pep. Yeah. But, you know, do go part
do
of the way.
Pick one of your defensive midfielders and a striker.
And also, what I wanted to do as well, if it's okay with you guys, is I wanted to address this quote unquote four right backs thing. It's really important because the way the media works is that they will try and find a narrative, as Jim's already alluded to, as to why there can be some controversy or something to talk about. And this four right backs thing seems to be the thing. It's the same with injuries. Listen to Lions Watch from Saturday, where Gary Lewin was on with Marcus and Vish, And he was talking about specifically injuries. Look, he was saying the most frustrating thing was not being able to answer back, because half the shit that was talked about injuries to players and tournaments was complete bollocks. And they would refer to knee injuries as, oh, he's got a knee injury, where every single knee injury Gary Lewin said he's seen in his entire career was completely different, right? Mm. So people are talking from not a position of knowledge. And that's why the injury thing's interesting. But the right back thing, I think, is fascinating, because Southgate said it clearly yesterday. These are good players. They've played in lots of different positions between them, and they're vital for the balance of our team. They're not just right backs. They're really good players. And every single one of them has played in a different position that isn't right back. So why are we fucking talking about it?
Yeah. Also, even the term right back is a bit of a misnomer now, isn't it? Mm-hmm. So if you look at the way Trent Alexander-Arnold plays, for example, yeah, it's like really influenced by Dani Alves, which is effectively a right-sided player, like, yeah, entire side of the pitch, yeah, is his remit. And I think there's an argument that all those players play like that now. Part of me wants to see him start Trent Alexander-Arnold at right wing back, Kieran Trippier on the left, Kyle Walker in a three, and Trent Alexander-Arnold in midfield.
Like, where you've just, like, didn't just you do put, Trent squeeze twice them all in. There?
I think I did, yeah. Yeah, so Reece James
is playing
right wing back.
I think,
yeah,
Gareth would pick him twice if he could.
Yeah.
Alexander-Arnold or Reece James?
Yeah, either of them. And I would be...
he wanted more right backs, he said.
Yeah, I'd be in favour of that.
He was like, where's Wan-Bissaka?
I think on the point, Jim, about the evolution of the positional play is really interesting as well, because you're absolutely right. It isn't a case of he's a defender, he's a midfielder, yeah, he's a forward. And it hasn't been that for some time.
And let's face it, he's providing more assists than anyone else for Liverpool. Mm. Trent Alexander-Arnold, and we can't afford to do without someone like that. And, you know, the right decision was made apparently 3 weeks ago when everyone wasn't panicking.
Well, he's, yeah, got that, you know, he also provides a sort of delivery people say that only James Ward-Prowse can. As we've said, it's Beckham-esque compared to what we've had in the past. And also, Jack Grealish is an absolute free kick factory. Mm. So if you've got him on the pitch, if you've got those two on the pitch, you potentially give yourself another advantage.
I'm not worried about it.
Don't have Harry Kane taking corners and you're fine.
Yeah, you've also got to look into, like, another example would be how the German squad announced their squads for tournaments. And they've been doing it for years. They don't really announce it in that same kind of way. Mm. These are the defenders, these are the midfielders. Mm. Germany's squad currently for the Euros, they've got three quote-unquote forwards. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And one of those is Timo Werner, one of them is Serge Gnabry, and one of them is Kevin Volland. I don't think they've announced their one for the actual, or maybe they have announced the 26, and that's the three. But if you look at it on paper, they've got 11 midfield players.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's Thomas Müller.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Exactly. So, and yeah, obviously it's not going to work like that, right? Mm. You can't tell me that Gundogan is the same as Joshua Kimmich, who's the same as Kai Havertz, who's played up front for Chelsea in the Champions League final. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense. So it is a lot more fluid now, and I think people get focused a bit too much on that. I understand the imbalance argument, but then, you know, players in that group of four have played left on the left. So look, it's different challenges for different games. We're planning for seven games in the tournament itself. It'll be a different challenge playing to Croatia than it will be playing to Scotland, which if you come up against the France, you've got a different challenge to solve. Mm. So he's looking for the players that are going to help him better do that.
It'll be great.
It will be.
It's going to be great.
You, if you don't look at any other squads, you can really easily convince yourself we're going to win this.
That's the problem. Yeah.
Oh, no. Now I feel like I should be taking the temperature down a little bit. Quick word on Jaylings. He's not in, or is he? Do we feel like there's something afoot here? Well, the fact that he's playing?
Get your tinfoil hats on.
Yeah,
yes.
We knocked up a theory about this, didn't we, before the show?
Well, I did it, and I want you to say it in case it's rubbish.
Well, you were saying that you think it's possible that somebody has an injury that hasn't been reported to the press that might become a problem later, so Lingard is staying in just in case that becomes a problem. And Southgate has said as well that this is the reserve list, so he needs to keep them in match shape, which does make sense. It seemed crazy at first, but when you hear him explain it, it's like, okay.
So let me put a bit more meat on those bones, because that was the light version. That was like the diet version.
And he's coming back
you,
in.
I respect
for
you for bailing me out there. I was actually what I thought would perhaps be the case is that there may be a player that we haven't talked about too much re-injuries that is perhaps a bit more injured than we think, and I think that player might be Marcus Rashford.
Right. Okay. I thought you were going to just do that whole thing and then not say who we think it is.
Tune in tomorrow. I think Marcus Rashford, who's got a well-publicised shoulder injury and foot injury, that isn't being talked about quite so much as being injured, because he said he's fine and he said to Gareth Southgate he's fine. I wonder whether, it may not even be him, but I wonder whether if someone does pull out between now and next Saturday, obviously Lingard will probably be the first off the block.
Yeah.
But I do also think that the rationale, although originally straight away when I heard about it I was confused, I do kind of understand it, that he wants to keep players match fit. He wants to give them chance to grace as part of the group as possible. I'm pretty sure Ben White, Ben Godfrey, and Aaron Ramsdale were always going to just be training for experience anyway. Yeah, yeah. But the other players perhaps will be called upon if something happens between now and Saturday. It has to be, I think, a new injury between now and next Saturday, which may mean my theory is completely blown out of the water. But look, we've got to talk about something, haven't we?
Isn't it the case that Jack Grealish hasn't been able to partake in every training session? So be a little question mark over him as well.
Yeah. There's already been some international football, guys. The biggest of all fixtures. San Marino got their first away goal in over 3.5 years in a 4-1 defeat to Kosovo.
That's the big story.
That's the big story.
And the famous YouTube San Marino fan played Titanic music over the top of it on YouTube.
Yeah, it's the San Marino fan account is what it's called. It's good to have stuff, you know, in this day of branding, complicated branding, it's good to have something that just does what it says on the tin.
Probably quite close to getting a game.
You're not wrong.
Being the pool.
Yeah.
I felt a bit sorry for, on the Sky Sports website, they put just the one San Marino goal, not the four Kosovo goals, all of which were scored by Vedat Muriki. So Very congrats, mate. Good job.
So he scored four goals in the game and didn't get in the highlights.
Yeah. Didn't get in the highlights.
That's astonishing.
Yeah. Well,
that's what you get when the most serene Republic of San Marino score a goal.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right. No, the most important game last night for us, I think, was seeing Croatia draw 1-1 with Armenia. That's right.
But Jim watched the game.
90th
I watched the
in the
first
world.
Half of the game. Yeah. You could see what looked like a B-road.
Didn't see the Armenia game.
In the background.
Goal, though.
No, I watched the highlights of it, though. Good goal, actually. It just looked like a training game, as you'd expect from this sort of friendly at this sort of
you
point.
You don't think it looks like a nailed-on example of the fact that we're going to absolutely smash that Croatian side?
They looked like they weren't ready for what's coming to them, I have to say. There was a real sense of that.
Do you mean England?
No, I can't see in the future.
Yeah.
That might yet happen tonight. Obviously, there's so little you can draw from that. I did feel a little bit like one of Bielsa's spies. Like,
oh, yeah.
Ha ha, they don't know I'm looking at this.
Right.
Just watching the game on telly.
Yeah. Honestly, it was in like what looked like a training stadium, like literally a B road in the background, like just people in Croatia.
I saw it, yeah.
You know, doing the thing.
But you know what's interesting? The Armenia goal was a beauty, by the way. If those of you who are fans of balls being smashed into the top corner for 30 yards, to check it out. It's a training game. It's a warm-up game. You know, there's going to be checking out different formations, different styles, different shapes, seeing players' fitness, etc. We can't read too much into the result. But what it did remind me of is something I've talked about quite a lot on Lions Watch. I know I keep mentioning it, but we are building up to the tournament now. So go and subscribe to it over on Football Ramble Presents. I've talked about how important it is the order in which you play your games in the group stage. And England have their hardest game first.
Yeah.
Now, that can be a problem. That can be problematic. Mm. It happened to England in quite a bad way in a tough group in 2014. They got knocked out in the group stage.
Not this England. Sorry.
But if you want, you need to stop this tub thumping because it's only going to look bad on you in a month's time.
I apologise.
If we go up against one of the weaker teams, Scotland or Czech Republic, it gives us a better chance. Having said that, I gamed out the path, which I think is much more difficult to do in a 24-team tournament. If it's 16 or 32, it's much more clear because 24-team tournament, you get the third-place teams coming through. Mm-hmm. It looks like it might be better for England to finish second in the group anyway. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how we go. But Croatia first is the toughest game. It's at Wembley, so fingers crossed.
Be interesting. I think, you know, you can only draw so much from these games, but I was struck by just how reliant they still are on Luka Modric, which is, you know, of course you're going to be very reliant on your best player. But it'd be interesting to see how England approach that, especially given how he ran the midfield in the World Cup.
Yeah, I think we might already been getting a bit overheated with enthusiasm here. Certainly I am. So let's cool down in a little break.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget? Quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more.
And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns. Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Bernie Katz was fun, he was kind. When he walked in, the room just lit up.
And there was something magical about this young man that just had a glint in his eye, that didn't give a shit about anything, but loved everything.
My first impressions were of a huge, vibrant and outgoing personality, all hugs, grins, extravagant language and wild attire.
Always in a leopard skin jacket, whirling around like a windmill. I know, she's a character. I don't know if those people exist anymore. They're sort of dying out. Everything's changed.
It is a bank holiday weekend in London, the late summer of 2017. The streets around Kentish Town, just north of the city and halfway towards Hampstead Heath, are unusually quiet. That evening, in a small, converted flat, just a 15-minute bus ride from King's Cross Station, Bernie Katz, pocket-sized and long-standing front-of-house manager of London's Groucho Club, is found dead by his landlord.
I said to him, what happened? You know, and he said, we are not talking about it. And yes, there have been the rumours. We've all heard. I mean, what did I hear specifically? That he was murdered.
His relationship with his father was so toxic. He hated the idea that his son was gay. His dad was a proper gangster. Bernie came down, there was a car far from. Guy blows his dad's head off.
They were all part of the same fetid, seething, self-referential nest of vipers that I think the Groucho had become.
Was Bernie depressive? I think yes. When alone, a condition he rarely sought, he had demons that flew about his head.
I get a call from Bernie and he is in £20,000 worth of debt with the Albanian gangsters in Soho. We all collected and paid the debt.
The way that the Albanians operate is very, very peculiar because they did not operate like any other mafia in Europe.
I've never been able to establish exactly what happened and why, but whatever it was so wrong.
Bernie, who killed the Prince of Soho? Listen now. A Stack production, available wherever you get your podcasts.
If I'm trying to get the Arsenal fans on side, there's one name missing from that list.
Oh,
well, thank you very much. Why don't you buy the club then?
Weird. Ooh. Wenger involved. Good to hear from him, Jim.
Yeah.
That's a bit. That's a former B and Collie. Yeah. I recognise that very clearly. Lovely old Wenger.
Yeah.
Why don't we get him in the studio, eh? These are the kind of guests we're managing to attract these days. Right, we need to get to some emails. Here we go.
They're reading out your emails. Yeah, 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 yeah. They're reading out your emails. Because they were sent in to show at footballramble.com. Where all the best banter originates from. Including stuff about Sven.
That's genuinely good. Mm. It's like a yacht rock fade out end as well.
Gotta be honest, I was hoping the jungle one would get another run out.
Well, there's always tomorrow. That's the beautiful thing about the Football Ramble. But that is an amazing. It's the first time I've been on the show with that jingle, and I wanted to absolutely praise its yacht rock sensibilities.
The Atmos has gone low, hasn't it, Lee?
Yeah, pair of chinos, no socks, loafers on a boat.
Mm.
Three
open
pairs
fire
of
on the boat somehow.
Yeah,
three pairs of naked legs in the studio today. I must tell the listeners.
Yeah. Well. wear shorts. Clear yeah. that up straight.
We're all wearing clothes from the waist down.
In today's political climate, let's clear that up.
Yeah. Imagine. Yeah.
You got an email, Luke.
Yeah. I have. There's five cameras in this studio. Don't want people saying I'm wearing any clothes to work. Matthew Campe has been in touch. Hello to you, Matthew. Thanks for emailing in. And this is reference the extra time chat we've been having earlier this week. He says, as a Canadian, I obviously like ice hockey. And the way they do overtime in their playoffs is quite interesting. If the game is tied after three periods, they enter a 5-on-5 overtime where nobody can leave until someone scores a goal. Love that. No one can leave. Yeah. Lock the doors. If 20 minutes, the length of a regular period, goes by without someone scoring, they take a quick break and try again. In extreme cases, the team staff will order pizzas to the locker room to make sure that players are fueled up for however many extra periods will be played.
Ooh,
I'd like to formally propose that UEFA take this approach for extra time in the Europa League. Instead of avoiding the fatigue problem, let's lean into it and see just how fit these players are.
Yeah, I like it.
Jurgen Klopp will be turning in his... Well, he's not dead. So
I'm surprised it's pizzas. I thought there'd be some like more characteristically Canadian things. I'm like, everyone gets Timmy Horton's donuts or whatever.
Poutine.
Poutine, yeah. I like it. So Alex Chalken has been in touch as well. He says, with a recent discussion of in-stadium pools, I wanted to point your attention to the best series of events involving an American sports team and an in-stadium pool. Baseball's Arizona Diamondbacks have an in-ground pool behind their outfield fence where patrons can watch the game, take a dip, and possibly catch a home run. In 2013, the Los Angeles Dodgers clinched a playoff appearance after winning a game at Arizona. To celebrate, the Dodgers jumped in the pool. Diamondbacks players and staff were later quoted calling the Dodgers classless and disrespectful. In 2017, the Dodgers won a playoff series in Arizona, and the Phoenix Police Department placed horse-mounted officers in front of the gate to the pool to prevent the celebration from recurring.
Wow.
I just feel like if you've got a pool there, let people enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's because so they would have jumped in them. It's because it's not their pool, is that the point?
And they probably would have all the dusty clothes on and stuff as well.
You can
clean up involved
got
in that.
All of, no, because pools have that recycling water thing all the time, don't they? Filtration, advanced filtration, I'd imagine, especially if they're letting guests in there.
I've never once been to a swimming pool where they say, do what you want because it'll get cleaned anyway.
True.
They always say have a shower before you get in.
Yeah, but they let little kids in there and those guys piss in the pools.
True. Not just little kids sometimes. Jules was actually right yesterday when she said, that's fine, but you want the pool to be elevated. Because if you're watching a game, a sport from a ground level and you're already effectively underground with your head at ground level, it's not going to work.
Kind of maybe Bielsa would disagree. That would be the future. They'll dig him a little hole.
Yeah.
And his head
lower
would just
lower.
Be at like ball level.
Like a little meerkat. Yeah. Like a meerkat when there's a decision to be made.
Yeah, sounds crap. Who'd want to watch sport from within a lovely swimming pool?
I'd love the idea of Bielsa being underground. And every so often you see a hand with a knife. Someone comes and gets it. He's just living underground in the lair. He's just got, VCRs downstairs watching.
He doesn't want to be distracted by the outside environment. Yeah. Absolutely not. Right, show at footballramble.com. Email us, please, or tweet us at footballramble. Thank you for that email, Alex. Now, let's get to Carlo Ancelotti because he is no longer the Everton manager. After 18 months in charge, he has returned to Real Madrid. I don't know about you guys, but I'm finding all of this, you know, returning to your former clubs a little bit much, but anyway.
A lot of it going on.
There's a lot of it going on. It's like, get some new ideas, people.
Yeah.
Anyway, come on to that. Chat about what it means from a Real Madrid perspective, perhaps in a second. But let's look at this from Everton's side of things. Friend of mine, Nick, who is a listener to the Football Ramble, good man, asked him about Ancelotti. And he said what I thought was quite an interesting thing. He said it almost felt too good to last, having Carlo Ancelotti, which, I mean, he said lots of interesting things, by the way, obviously. But, you know, this grand old club, 5-time FA Cup winners, 9-time league champions, okay, not since the Premier League. They finished last season 10th with 59 points.
Yeah.
The fact that a fan who's been a fan since babyhood can say that it felt too good to last to have a manager like this.
Well, it's not really surprising. I mean, Ancelotti's used to managing sort of elite level players, and he didn't obviously quite have that in most cases, you know. But I do think he got off a little bit lightly, actually.
I agree with that.
With the job he did there. They sort of reverted to type. And with the kind of manager he is, the level of experience he has as well, you would think he'd be able to get better out of them. And I think that is the most important challenge that Everton face now. I don't think they necessarily have to go after a big name because you're obviously going to be vulnerable to them being cherry-picked in this exact manner. What they need to do is get someone who can improve the players they've got. They've got to hang on to James Rodriguez and hang on to Richarlison, even though he's been very, very frustrating. They've got to concentrate on getting more out of what they already have because it's been disappointing. That's been their problem for a while, isn't it? It must be very frustrating as an Everton fan.
I think it has been really frustrating. I mean, so what, Graham Potter? I mean, some of the people that have been linked with them, it's all people that can't go there. Like, David Moyes, no chance he's going back, especially not given the job he's doing at West Ham. Everton fans, I think, mainly quite snobby about Eddie Howe, with, you know, obviously went down with Bournemouth. Nuno Espirito Santo.
Nuno's been linked with the Palace job.
I'm astonished by that. I thought when he left with a couple of games of the season to go that he was leaving because he had somewhere to go, but it doesn't look that way, does it?
Yeah, I don't have any particular insight into what his decision-making process was, but I saw him linked with Crystal Palace yesterday, which was surprising. But on the Everton thing, I mean, I think as ever, as with a lot of things we talk about in football, I think Leicester probably provide the template here. I think Leicester are the template. Actually, there's no reason, for example, Spurs couldn't be like a turbocharged Leicester. Get a coherent off-field plan, hire the right people to make the football decisions, and get a coach like a Brendan Rodgers or whatever, and that would work. There's no difference to that. Everton are a historic club. They're a proud club. They've got high expectations. They're known as being, you know, Goodison Park's known as being one of the most, if not the most demanding stadiums in the Premier League. So it's a project for someone.
Yeah.
You know, speaking about Ancelotti getting away with one, I mean, he's just gone to Real Madrid in a 3-year deal. So you don't get away with anything more than that.
Yeah. But do you know what I think is kind of amazing also, looking at Ancelotti, the fact that they have, I guess, if you're asked to go and manage Real Madrid again, you can't say no.
Of course not.
Because it seemed, you know, like a few days ago, he was talking about being there for the opening of their new stadium, Carlo Ancelotti. Like, it really seems to have taken... But that said, perhaps this is me and Farhad Moshiri perhaps being naive, because he's not, Carlo, he's not lasted more than 2 years in a job since he was at AC Milan for 8 years.
His reputation is so good and so bulletproof that he will always get jobs. It's no different to a Mourinho thing, really. I mean, he's less box office than Mourinho, but he's achieved a lot in his career. He's absolute football royalty as a player and as a manager. And if you read what David Cartledge, we have on OTC regularly, says, it's a good move for Real Madrid at the moment, because it's stability, it's something they need. They want to get Raul long term, but he's not ready yet. So Ancelotti coming in, it's like, you know, getting your favourite uncle to look after you for a weekend while your parents are away, isn't it? You know, it's a great thing to do. Everyone's gonna have a lovely time, aren't they? It's gonna be brilliant. You probably eat as much pizza as you want.
Yeah.
You know, and so it works for them. And it is absolutely right. He's not gonna turn it down, because who is gonna turn a 3-year deal down at Real Madrid, even though you're only gonna work 18 months of that? You're gonna get a payoff for the rest of it, probably.
So I've been to the Bernabeu once and I wanted to play for Real Madrid.
Oh,
mate. Do you know what I mean? Like, you get it. Even all the evil empire stuff about them.
Yeah.
Like, but like, you get there and you're like, no, I want a piece of this.
Well, that's the thing about evil empires, they're very good recruiters.
Well, quite,
aren't they?
Yeah. Absolutely. I think briefly going back to Everton as well, though, I think, and this is the owners, obviously, rather than the expectations of the fans, they've been so obsessed with the Champions League and getting into it, it seems, you know, with the money they've spent and what they've spoken about their ambitions being. But I feel like they should be aiming to establish themselves as a Europa League team for a little while and then build from that. I feel like the owners have wanted a bit too much, a bit too soon, which is kind of understandable when you manage to get in and a manager like that.
But it's hard to, though, isn't it? Because
exactly.
The Europa League brings its own challenges. And if you think at the league position they finished in since the new ownership's taken over, I mean, it's not been great. It's not that they've not. It's very hard to break into that.
Yeah.
And they've shown it how hard it can be, even with the resources they've had, because they spent like £500 million on players or something.
Yeah.
But you have to get it right. And I do think, and perhaps Everton fans will be upset with me saying this and comparing them to Leicester, but the Leicester model is the template. It works. I'm not talking about the ownership and how, you know, sports washing and, you know, the idea of a good billionaire and a bad billionaire or whatever. But the point is, the football operation at Leicester works because they've got a coherent plan. And there's no reason other clubs, Spurs and Everton, the ones that spring to mind, can't replicate that. But they've got to make the right decisions. And you're not going to do that with a Carlo Ancelotti. It's just not going to happen.
So you're now saying it looks as though it was... At the time, it looked like a massive coup, like how this is putting Everton back where they belong. But now, you're saying, Luke, it looks a bit more like a kind of a vanity move that didn't really play.
No, at the time, I thought,
I mean,
it was
Big
a great
Sam
signing.
Big Sam finished, obviously, eighth with Everton. So, you know,
yeah,
questions should be asked.
I at the time, I thought it was a great, great move for them, because it steps them up. And if he could have forced them in there... it would have made sense, because he had the experience to operate at the very top table in football if he could deliver Everton there, but he couldn't. So, I mean,
so it's the point is getting, he couldn't, you're saying if they'd have got to that position, that would have been the man to have in, i.e. sort of Europa League
maybe,
area.
Yeah.
But to get them up to that, that wasn't his skill set.
You know what? This might actually, in the short term even, be a good thing for Everton, because Ancelotti was always going to be susceptible to this sort of move, as we've discussed. And perhaps it looked to be a better fit than it was. So the sooner they get on with actually bringing someone in who can be there for a bit longer, get a coherent plan formulated, the better, really, because it's not really been progress, has it, in this one season? And now they've got to sort of rip it up and start again. So better to get on with that now than wait another season.
They can always look back on being top a month into the season, though. You remember that, Everton fans?
Every team at one point was top, weren't they? Like Spurs were top at one point. There was another team that came up yesterday that were top for a weird amount of time at some point in the season. It happens.
Mm. Yeah, and if we can just add to the speculation, one manager I think potentially will be linked, definitely, is Alan Pardew, and he's lining up with Luke.
Barton might have gone, and Trevino did.
Why Barton?
Well, because he grabbed him by the throat.
Well, I just thought that, firstly, the guy's dived.
Yes, indeed. It is time to play your Pards right. Is it just an excuse to play that jingle? Parsley. Just doing name association.
Now. Phil Bardsley.
Lee Carsley. Oh, we're having a meltdown. Great. It's time to play your Pards right. For those of you who don't know how it goes, you will pick it up very quickly, much like the man himself. It's pretty uncomplicated. Jim and Kate play together. They're a team. They're also a team on the book club as well. So they're used to working together on this kind of stuff. Although we haven't had Pards on that yet. But you are going to have to work together to win this game. The best performance, both of which included Andy Brassel's presence, both as a solo artist and as in a group.
I think we should forget the solo one.
Was seven players correct. What I do is I give the guys a subject, or they pick a subject from a group of five, and then we go higher or lower all the way through. So here we go. The categories are sorted today. Please pick a number between one and five.
Two.
Two, okay, right. You have chosen tackles in the Premier League since 2006 and 7.
Right.
The reason for that is because certain stats weren't monitored by the Premier League until then. So from 2006 to 2007, individual players and the amount of tackles they've made in the Premier League. Okay.
It's a joke.
You might hear that in a bit. We start, as always, with Alan Pardew, who at the time of recording, and according to our stats, has made zero tackles in the Premier League. Your first player is Vincent Kompany. Do you think he's made higher or lower than zero tackles?
So did Vincent Kompany ever make a tackle in the Premier League? That's the question here.
Luke always says that I'm not confident enough when I'm doing games, so I'm going to practice that.
Yeah. What do you think?
Higher.
You've got
yes.
one.
Oh,
you've got
I feel
one.
Strong.
There you go, Kate. Okay. Off the mark.
Up straight.
Vinny Kompany made 550 tackles in the Premier League.
Wow.
Let me get that down.
You think it'd be higher than that? Or I would have thought, anyway.
Well, that could be instructive. Hold that thought.
The best defenders don't need to tackle as much.
True.
So maybe that's partly why.
No, they control you with their mind.
Exactly. Next player who certainly didn't, actually, who pretty much controlled the entire game with his mind.
Oh, yeah.
Higher or lower than 550, tackles in the Premier League, Paul Scholes.
Surely that's got to
nice
be
nice little red herring, right?
Yeah,
nice little red herring.
Sorry, lower. I mean lower, because a lot of his tackles were really more assaults, weren't they?
They still count as tackles.
Well, do they though? Do they? If it's a foul, is it a tackle? Yeah, it could be a red herring because he would have played in the Premier League although it's since 2006, isn't
it? Yeah, it's since 2006.
What do you think on this one, Kate?
I feel stressed.
People are playing along. What do you think?
I feel it will be lower, but then he did play in midfield where...
A lot of different variables, aren't there?
There are a lot of variables.
I've actually...
if you don't get this one right, just to let you know...
I'm really blanked,
all the listeners to know, this will be the worst performance in the history of the game.
Yeah, but you could... The way you set up the game is very variable. The algorithm is much more shaky on this one, I'd say.
Don't come into the studio and talk to me about algorithms, all right? I'm the algorithm king.
I've been watching Tenet, though.
An algorithm hides a multitude of sins when it comes to producing shows.
Okay.
Higher or lower than 550. Come on, everyone listening would have made their choice. What's your choice?
Should we say lower? Because I'm the only one making a decision here, so let's go lower. And if it ends,
which is unlike you, they're probably saying.
Indeed. If God, it ends terribly, so be it.
Lower.
I accept it.
You want to go lower?
Shit, no.
Yes!
Do you want to guess how many he made?
437.
373.
Ooh, it was a bigger gap than we thought.
You've got two. Next player, higher or lower than 373 tackles in the Premier League since 2006-07, Fernandinho.
Fernandinho.
Surely higher.
You were surely higher than 337. Fernandinho. He's
been playing 373 it was.
373, yeah. Sorry. He's played in the Premier League for a long time, Fernandinho. I think that's going to be higher.
Let's just do it.
Higher?
Yeah.
Ding!
That's three. Okay, so you're three down.
Okay, so we're now out of the meltdown.
You're out of the embarrassment zone.
Thank you. Do you think so? You think the embarrassment zone is three?
Yeah, I'd say so, yeah.
Well, that's a relief. I feel better now.
Yeah. Player number four, higher or lower than 578 tackles, is Cesc Fabregas. Cesc Fabregas.
578, was it?
It is, yeah.
Is it 578?
Fabregas is always an interesting one because people think of him as synonymous with the Premier League, but also he played elsewhere as well. So yeah, it's easy to get seduced.
I lean towards lower.
Oh, God.
On that one because...
Yeah.
Fernandinho is just far more that type of player, isn't he?
When yeah, I agree.
Fabregas
yeah.
wasn't so much of a ball winner. So I think lower.
You're going to go lower? Is that your official answer? Yeah?
Yes.
Don't look at my finger to see which button I'm going to press. You confirm
looking,
your
I was
answer.
Trying to look at your yeah. face.
Ah,
sake!
Cesc, you prick. Broken my heart all over again.
It's a joke. Clearly they need...
I forgot. I actually forgot that was in there.
Cesc Fabregas has made an astonishing 663 wow. Premier League tackles in his career, which means you
that
end,
is amazing.
Play your pals right today with three, eight, fairly
I'm really, really
three.
Gutted. I'm really gutted.
Yeah, sorry, Cesc.
Yeah,
I apologise.
I think you can apologise to me, actually. I'd rather feel like you railroaded that one through.
Well, you had every opportunity to put forward your own opinion.
I'm intimidated by
how the game works.
I'm intimidated by your good looks and charms. I was too scared. All right, then. I feel sad. That's a low way to exit.
You wouldn't find that on Brussels Watch, is all I'm going to say. No. And I think listeners will be frustrated because they would have wanted to carry on.
Yeah.
So maybe
is there any way of doing that?
Well, I think as a patron thing, maybe we'll do something in the future. Patreon.com/footballramble. Subscribe. Maybe we'll do a Play Your Pards Right version that you guys can play along with.
Right.
We could do it like a poll. Everyone can vote. All the patrons can vote. And, yeah. And we'll see how many far they can get.
I like it. I think if you want to cheer us up, actually, come to think of it... if you enjoyed today's show, could you please head over to Apple Pods or wherever you get your podcasts and drop us a review? It really, really helps the show. And yeah, if you've listened, if you're here at this end point, then you must think it's all right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
If you listen to this, give us a review.
You can make whatever review you want, but you've listened to this stage, so presumably you like it a bit. Lots of international football coming up tonight. England against Austria. Jesse Lingard, is he going to stake his claim on that
it'd be
secret
funny if
injury spot?
If he bangs in the hat-trick, that'd be funny.
Yeah. It would. Yeah. France up against Wales. Yeah, I guess Wales are the red letter ones in that one. Netherlands play Scotland. There's also FIFA World Cup CONCACAF qualifying, if you like a bit of, you know, Caribbean.
That's exhausting. Football. Just even hearing that is exhausting.
There you go.
You're not telling us you're getting sad about the football again, Jim.
Yeah, it's happened already.
We're all back in the joyful international zone.
Wait.
We're happy. The season is done. Long live the Euros.
I am genuinely really excited about it now. Like
yeah,
yesterday, it's like the fever kicked in.
But the guys will be pouring over the result from tonight, tomorrow, so that'll be exciting too.
They certainly will. And by those guys, you mean Marcus, Pete and Jim, you'll be back.
Yep.
You'll be bringing your excitement back into this warm yep. studio. Say goodbye for now though, Jim.
Goodbye for now though, Jim.
Say goodbye, Lee.
Goodbye.
Bye, everybody. See you tomorrow.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi,
I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.